You're listening to audio from Southwestern Baptist Theological Seminary, where we train students to preach the Word and reach the world. For more free resources like this one, visit www.swbts.edu/media resources.
It's an honor to be here back at Southwestern and to represent the North American Mission Board along with all of my colleagues down here who serve so faithfully across North America. And you were handed one of these prayer bands as you came in. It's the 10-2 prayer band, which reminds us to pray for God to send forth His laborers into His harvest field. And since Adam didn't have one, I'm going to give him mine. I've got plenty of these, Adam. But there you go, buddy. But I'd appreciate it if you would wear that and remember to pray to the Lord of the harvest. Now, here's what we suggest you do: that just set your phone every day, or your watch, whatever, however you do it, but set it every day at 10:02 in the morning, 10:02 in the evening, and at those times, just pray for North America and for God to send out and call out and send out the church planters that are needed into the harvest field across North America. Now, you know, if you're just not really spiritual at all, then, you know, on October the 2nd, you might consider praying for the laborers in the harvest. We'd appreciate you doing that, at least. But I know you're much better prayer warriors than that. I'm sort of the warm-up guy today. You're going to hear a great pastor tomorrow. My pastor, Dr. Ted Traylor, is going to be here with you. And it's going to, just hold on to your seats. He's an outstanding preacher. You're really going to enjoy him and get a real challenge from him as well. So I know you'll look forward to hearing him tomorrow. I want to share with you a little bit today just about North America and the great need across North America and why it's so important for what Dr. Lee is doing here on campus to encourage church planting and to work with church planters and to prepare church planters and sending out student missionaries and interns and apprentices all over North America out of Southwestern Seminary. To give you just a little bit of a glimpse of what the picture is, because sometimes, since I spent almost my entire life and ministry here in Texas, it's easy for us to think that life is like this everywhere else, and it isn't. We've identified 32 cities across North America that we're calling send cities. You have to say that real carefully, okay? The overall umbrella emphasis is called Send North America, where we're trying to send missionaries, church planters, all over North America to help us penetrate lostness. And we feel like one of the best ways to penetrate lostness is by planting churches. And so we are so grateful for you. But outside of the South, when you get outside of Texas, when you get outside of the South region that I serve, which is 15 conventions and 13 states across the South, you get into what we call the non-South areas, the picture changes dramatically. And so let me give you just a little glimpse. Across the South region that I serve, there are some 39,000, almost 40,000 Southern Baptist churches. That's a church-to-population ratio of 1 to about 3,000. When you get into Canada, there are almost not quite 300 churches, 298 churches. That means there's one church for every 118,000 people. Now, I'm rounding off the numbers for you. When you get into the Northeast, it's a different picture. It's 1,800 churches, and it's one Southern Baptist church for every 36,000 people. When you get into the Western region of the United States, or of North America, it's one Southern Baptist church for about every 18,000 people, or about 4,500 Southern Baptist churches in the West. In the Midwest, it's one Southern Baptist church for about every 15,000 people, and just a little over 5,000 Southern Baptist churches. So you can see why we are trying to put as much emphasis as we can on these cities where lostness is the greatest and the church-to-population ratio is the least. If there's anything that I have always appreciated from my days here at Southwestern, it has been the commitment and the passion for evangelism. And it was while I was here at Southwestern that the Lord put in my heart the desire to plant a church. And that was back when, you know, planting a church wasn't a cool thing to do. In fact, you were treated more like a stepchild if you were a church planter back then. But Diane and I felt that God had called us to go plant a church in San Antonio, in a growing area of San Antonio where they didn't have a church. The medical school had grown up. The UTSA was just starting. And we moved out there to help plant a church. It was the two of us, and there were two couples who said, "We'll help you," when we got there. And we left a growing church here in Fort Worth to do this. But God just put it on our heart. And the first Sunday we got there, so there's seven of us in the worship service in a little school cafeteria. And I went home and cried. I thought, I must have missed God. You know, I thought it'd be full, but it wasn't. But as Dr. Blazing said, there's a great church there now, and it's still growing and thriving. And if you're planning on being a church planter, let me just encourage you. We were able to go back for the 25th anniversary of the church and to see people that you led to the Lord, that you baptized, that you discipled, who are now the key leaders in the church. They're in charge of the ministries, and the church is still growing well because you didn't build it on yourself. You built it on the Word, and you built it on Jesus. You know, it's just a little bit of a glimpse of what heaven's going to be like. So when the work is tough out there for you as church planters, just remember, if God could roll back the curtain and let you step back in there 25 years from now, then you won't believe the blessings that it'll be to your life and what you gain from it. But you know, folks, if we don't penetrate lostness and conserve the harvest through church planting, North America's in trouble. And we've got to get more people and more planters and more resources channeled outside of the South into the non-South areas than ever before if we're ever going to change the spiritual landscape of North America. I served 8 years as the executive director in Indiana, and I can tell you one of the biggest culture shocks was the size of the churches and in that state where there are only 400 Southern Baptist churches, and the convention operates on a budget of just a little under $3 million in cooperative program receipts. I mean, I can tell you it is a different world. I mean, you take the state of Alabama, for example, that has a budget of approximately $35 million, and they have 3,000 Southern Baptist churches penetrating a state of about 4 million people, and Indiana's a state of 7 million people. Stop and calculate that for a moment, and it gives you just an idea about how difficult the work really is. But what it also says is it's some of the greatest opportunities we've ever had as Southern Baptists to penetrate lostness and to help change the spiritual landscape of North America. And so I wanted to just challenge you to be in prayer about that, because God may be calling you out to do that. He's not calling everybody to be a church planter or to be on a church plant team. But I want you to pray about that, because that is a huge need. Our goal is over the next 10 years to try to plant 15,000 new congregations across North America. If we are able to do that in the next 10 years, we will average about a 3% growth rate in the numbers of churches across North America. And it'll make a significant difference. It'll be the greatest decade of church growth in the history of the Southern Baptist Convention if that happens. And that's what we're praying for. But in order to do that, you can do the math. We need approximately 1,500 new church planters every single year in order to get that done. And you've got folks here from all over North America. You've got them from Seattle and Boston and Baltimore and Indianapolis and Vancouver and, help me out, guys, where Phoenix, Pennsylvania, San Francisco, Seattle, all these places from across North America that Dr. Lee has brought in and put together here. So take this opportunity to connect with these guys and find out about the great challenges and the great blessings and the exciting things God is doing. For example, in Canada, one of the most unlikely places in all of North America, in Montreal, Canada, the most unreached city in North America, there's a church planter who started last April, and in 3 months he baptized 40 people on one Sunday. And when he gave the invitation, after all these folks had shared their testimonies, 30 more people came down to profess their faith in Jesus Christ. I mean, it's just unbelievable some of the things that are happening. And in Seattle, last year, 28 brand new church plants. They've never seen that in Seattle ever before. But these are the kind of things God's doing across North America. It is an exciting time. So put that before the Lord for you, because he may just be wanting to put his hand on you to call you out as a church planter. And we're equipped and we're ready to help send you, along with our convention partners. We're ready to help assess you. We're ready to help support you. And we're ready to help create the kind of dimension that we're talking about in the next hour over lunch and in a class today. We'll be talking about how we're actually going about doing that to help you get to these places and as never before. So it's really an exciting time to sense God's call and surrender to God's call as a church planter. But it's all about penetrating lostness. That's the reason we're placing the emphasis on church planting. It's about penetrating lostness. When we planted our church in San Antonio, I didn't know anything to do except what I'd been trained to do here at Southwestern, and that was to share my faith. And I sat in Dr. Fish's class, and back then, it was evangelism explosion. So that's what I used. Before that, it was the four spiritual laws in a church I was serving in Mount Pleasant, where Dr. McKellar was one of our students. The only thing I knew to do was just teach somebody else what I knew to do. And I made a commitment earlier in my ministry that I was always going to be about as a pastor of equipping people to share their faith in Jesus Christ, so that they could in turn equip somebody else to share their faith. That's what it was all about. I remember one time Dr. Frank Page and I, we were fellow pastors in Texas here at the time. And this is a true story, by the way. We were, because sometimes people wonder if this is a true story that I'm getting ready to tell. We went out to make a visit one night together. We were training about 150 pastors, education ministers, music ministers, youth ministers, had about 50 of them. We were training them to use an evangelism tool so they could go back to their churches and equip their people. So we had them all sent out, and Dr. Page and I went out. I had four or five cards and names of people. We went out, we knocked on this door, and it was pouring down rain, and there's this big golden retriever on the front step right in front of the door, and he's just soaking wet from the rain. I mean, just soaking wet. And a lady opens the door. We're standing there in a pouring down rain. We told her who we were, and she invited us to come in, which kind of surprised us. So when she stepped back to open the door, well, that golden retriever got up, and he went inside the house, and we followed him in, and we sat down in the living room. And ladies, she had put down brand new white carpet in her living room. And so here's this golden retriever, while we're trying to get to know the family and share the gospel, he's rolling around on the carpet, you know, he's trying to dry off and get cozy and comfortable and shaking the water off of him. We're trying to share the gospel. Amazing thing was, when we gave them the opportunity to pray to receive Christ, the whole family prayed with us, a family of six. They all prayed to receive Christ. We were so excited we could hardly stand ourselves. We did all that immediate follow-up stuff that you do. Arranged where to meet them on Sunday, you know, so we can, and then talk to them about baptism, all those kind of things. They were all excited. I had a prayer of thanksgiving and told them it was so great that we were able to be here and God was so good. And they said, oh, we're so thankful that you came and so forth, you know. And I said, well, it was so gracious for you to let us in on a night like this. It's pouring down rain, but you were so kind to do this. And we look forward to seeing you Sunday. And we started toward the door, and the lady says, wait a minute. And I turned back, and I said, yes, ma'am. She said, aren't you going to take your dog with you? I said, dog? I said, that's not my dog. I thought he was your dog. She said, it's not our dog, you know. Well, Frank and I got in the car. He died laughing. He just broke down. He said, I wonder what that lady was thinking about us, that we'd have the nerve to bring our old wet dog into her brand-new white carpet, you know, while we're trying to shoot. But folks, let me tell you, there are people out there who haven't accepted Jesus, but neither have they rejected him. They just haven't heard. They just haven't heard. And you know what? In Romans chapter 10, verses 14 and 15, I'm going to put on my glasses here for a second. I'm not a student anymore. It's a passage that I know you're familiar with. But how can they call on him in whom they have not believed? And how can they believe without hearing about him? And how can they hear without a preacher? And how can they preach unless they are sent? As it is written, how welcome are the feet of those who announce the gospel of good things. How can they hear unless we're sent? It's all about using our feet, isn't it? And I mean, it's a time to think about it. You know, why talk about the feet? I mean, smelly feet, dirty feet, feet with corns and bunions and calluses and ingrown toenails and fungus infections. And yet, our feet are an important instrument in missions and evangelism. Because the simple truth is this. If our feet don't go, the message of Jesus doesn't go. That's the simple truth. That's why we pray for the Lord of the harvest to send out laborers into his harvest field, because if the feet don't go, the message won't go. That's the simple truth, folks. When we planted this church in San Antonio, as I told you, I just thought, well, this is a brand new church. Here's what I'm going to do. I was going basically door to door every day, just knocking on doors and trying to meet people and share the gospel. And I decided everybody who becomes a part of our church, I'm going to teach them how to do what I know to do, just to share their faith. And we're going to put a major emphasis on just going out and sharing the gospel and on outreach. Now, as Dr. Blazing said, my wife has written, she has a million fresh ideas go through her head in 30 seconds. If I have one, it's die of loneliness, okay? But I came up with a slogan. If we go, we grow. If we don't, we won't. Now, for me, that had a real ring and a good sound, and I thought, hey, this is good. For me, this is really good. So I had posters made up and banners, and everywhere you went, which we didn't have many places in our buildings then, we didn't have many buildings, but everywhere you went, you ran into one of those posters or one of those banners. If we go, we grow. If we don't, we won't. Now, guys, this will tell you how our wives think a little differently than we do and why we ought to listen to them every now and then, a little more than we do. We got in the car, we're headed home from church, and Diana says, would you mind if I give you a suggestion? I said, sure. She said, I don't think it's appropriate to put those signs in the bathroom stalls. Well, I never thought about that. All I knew was, if we go, we grow, and if we don't, we won't, right? I guess it's a principle of the biological world. We got a brand new grandson, and I can tell you that's true. If you don't go, you don't grow. But it's the same in the spiritual realm as well. So I want to talk to you what I think, you know, the slogan for the North American Mission Board is whatever it takes. When you come onto the property of the North American Mission Board in Alpharetta, Georgia, there's a huge banner that says whatever it takes. When you walk inside the door, you'll see signs that say, whatever it takes to get the gospel out, to plant churches across North America, that's what we want to be about, that's what we want to get accomplished. And I want to just share with you briefly what I think it's going to take. First of all, I think it's going to take a new awareness, conviction about the lostness of people. People really are lost without Jesus. Paul said in chapter 10 in verse 1, he said, I could wish that all of my countrymen could come to faith in Jesus. In chapter 9, it was such a passion for him that he said that he would be willing to be cursed by God if it meant that his brethren would come into the kingdom, come to a relationship with Jesus. It was a passion for Jesus. He said, the Son of Man came to seek and to save that which was lost, right? Lost. It's a passion for him. And when you stop and think about it, here's the Apostle Paul. That's his passion in life. And he's going from place to place and constantly sharing the gospel and then conserving the harvest by planting a church. And that's what he dotted the New Testament world with, was brand new churches everywhere he went. And that's what we need to do across North America. Is dot North America with more churches, because we're way behind when it comes to keeping up with the population growth across North America. And I don't need to tell you that our world is not getting any better. And the attitude toward Christianity continues to get worse and worse all across North America. We need this emphasis. That's why you're here. You're here for a reason. You're here because God is preparing you to not only serve our existing churches, where there are going to be pastors retiring or staff members retiring, and we need replacements for them. That's a great concern I have, is with our emphasis on church planting, are there going to be enough coming out of our seminaries to take care of our existing churches that need pastors? I mean, that's a huge need out there. It's a both-and kind of situation. But right now, we've got to focus on planting more churches across North America, especially in our non-South areas, if we want to help change the spiritual landscape of North America. People really are lost. You know, why did Paul have such a passion about that? Because he knew that people without a relationship with Jesus Christ were destined to never experience the forgiveness of sin, that they would never have a relationship with God through Jesus Christ, that they would never be able to demonstrate the glory of God through their lives in a saving relationship with Him, and that the ultimate destination for a person like that was knowing only the eternal wrath of God in hell, the lostness of people. And yet in many of our churches, I fear that there is no passion for lost people. You announce an ice cream social and a crowd will show up. You announce outreach night, let's go out and share the gospel, and it's a handful that show up. We've got to get to the place where we're equipping our people to share their faith in the everyday work atmosphere, wherever they are, sharing the gospel of Jesus Christ, sharing their testimonies, and helping to penetrate the lostness in North America. Our neighbor went to the Billy Graham Crusade in Dallas with us several years ago. And I'll never forget this. When he got up off of his knees, receiving Jesus into his life, he turned to me and he said, "I don't know why it took me so long to come to this decision. I only know that I was lost out there somewhere. And I realized I can't make it on my own. I was lost out there somewhere, and I realized I can't make it on my own." I want to submit to you guys this morning that I think there are more lost people out there who are willing to admit their lostness than many church people are willing to admit. A conviction about the lostness of people. Who are these people that Paul's talking about? The they that he continues to mention. It's all people everywhere, all colors, all creatures, all classes, all cultures. Everybody needs Jesus Christ. Everybody. Doesn't matter who they are. They need Jesus. And we've got to come back to that basic conviction. Well, we also need to realize that the only motivation for our feet being put into action to take the gospel to the lost world, the lost portions of North America, the only motivation is the love of Jesus Christ in us, for us, and through us. In 2 Corinthians 5:14, he said, Christ's love compels us. Christ's love drives us out. Christ's love thrusts us out. Like the Spirit of God drove Jesus into the wilderness, the Spirit of God, the love of Jesus needs to drive us out into the world of lostness and take the gospel to them, to penetrate that lostness and conserve the harvest through church planting. But the only motivation for that is love. I've been in a lot of churches, and I've never been anywhere where a church where they didn't say, "We're a friendly church." But I'll tell you what, I've been in a lot of those churches where being friendly meant friendly with each other. I mean, we went to a church one time, and a lady told my wife that she didn't know I was the guest preacher. And she told my wife, "You're sitting in my seat." So Diana got up and moved. Or they say, shake hands with folks, and they shake hands with everybody except those that they don't know. Let me tell you something. Folks, it's important to have a friendly church. But when people are walking into the church, they're brand new, they're lost or whatever, they're not just looking for a friendly church, they're looking for friends of church. And we wave our placards and our banners at the lost, and we remind them that we don't like the way they walk, and we don't like the way they talk, and we don't like their morals, and we don't like their values. And especially at election time, we'll really stand up and do that. But if I remember right, Jesus said, "For God so loved the world that he gave his only begotten Son, that whoever believes in him would not perish but have eternal life," right? And they need to say about our churches what they did about the early church. My, how they love one another. So Christ's love for us and Christ's love in us and Christ's love through us is what's got to penetrate the lost world. That's got to be the only motivation that gets us out on our feet into the areas where lost people are. I mean, what would cause somebody like the Apostle Paul to travel thousands of miles on foot, to brave changing weather conditions, to go into towns and villages where in many places he would be rejected or beaten or thrown in prison or stoned or left on a garbage heap to die, and then he'd get right back up and go back into town and continue to preach the gospel? Or what would cause him to put up with doctrinal pettiness in churches and fellowship issues like the church at Philippi? What would cause him to put up with all of that and continue to go on and on and on and bear in his body the marks for the Lord Jesus? I'll tell you what it is. It was the love of Jesus for him, the love of Jesus in him, and the love of Jesus through him. That's all it is. When our daughter was a freshman in college at Baylor, she went to Juarez, Mexico with 600 college students. And in a week's time, she called us and she said, we saw 1,500 people pray to receive Christ this week, and we got them all connected to local churches. And I thought, how in the world does that happen? How, where you have language barriers and cultural barriers, how do 1,500 people come to faith in Jesus in 1 week's time like that? And she said, the only way I know how to explain it is they saw the love of Jesus in us and the love of Jesus through us. We've got to come to a conviction about the lostness of people, or we'll never make the commitment to use our feet to get out to share the gospel. But we've got to also know that the love of Jesus is the only real, compelling reason for us to do that. He loves those lost people that have yet to receive him. And he wants to use us to take the message to them. What a great privilege. What a great honor. It's worth investing your life for. But I don't know if you've thought about this. Have you ever thought about the lateness of the times? In Romans 13, just three chapters over from this, in Romans 13, he says, the hour has come, the time has come to awaken from your slumber, because our salvation is nearer now than when we first believed. I don't ever pretend to. I've got letters in my files that I've kept over the years, Dr. Blazing, where I'd get a letter from somebody telling me when Jesus is coming back, day and time and all that, and all of them have come and gone, and Jesus didn't show up yet, okay? So I'm not going to venture there. That's foolish to do that. Jesus said only the Father knows, right? What we got to be doing, though, is be about the Father's business, because since we don't know how much time the lost have in North America or in the world. When you look around our world at what's happening, there are all kinds of signs that the second coming may be on the horizon. But there have been bad times before and people thought that. So what I'm saying is, I'm not telling you this to say panic over it. I'm telling you we need a sense of urgency. A new, fresh sense of urgency about sharing the gospel, penetrating lostness and planting churches. That's got to become a great urgency. Whatever it takes. One of my best deacons was a man named Bill. Bill was a school teacher, or his wife was a school teacher. He worked for the Teachers Credit Union in Garland, Texas. And Bill was always, he was not a guy that you would say, when you meet him and talk to him, you wouldn't think this guy could lead anybody to Jesus. You know, he stammered a lot. He wasn't real eloquent. You just thought, well, he doesn't really have that gift. But he was faithful. Every time we were training a group on how to share their faith, he'd take two people and he'd train them. And he'd take them out, show them how to do it. He taught fifth grade boys in Sunday school for 57 years. And he never missed a Sunday in Sunday school. And you say, well, wait a minute, didn't he take vacations? Yeah, he did, but he always went to Sunday school on his vacation because he wanted to make sure when he got back he could tell his boys, I was in Sunday school last Sunday. Were you in your place? And his goal every year with each class was to go and visit in the home of every single boy. He wanted to be in his home, in his context, meeting with him and talking to his parents and his siblings, because he prayed that God would allow him to see that boy come to faith in Jesus before he left his class to go into the sixth grade. And just about every year, the Lord honored that in his life. So you fast forward 57 years. Bill's just had some major surgery, and he almost died on the operating table. And he's lying in a hospital on a Sunday morning, unable to go to Sunday school and church. And those fifth grade boys asked their parents, will you take us to the hospital so we can have Sunday school with our Sunday school teacher and he won't have to miss? So they did. The next Sunday, Bill was still not home. I mean, not he was at home now, but he wasn't still able to come to church. And those boys asked their mothers, will each of you prepare something for lunch, take us to our Sunday school teacher's house so we can have Sunday school with him and lunch with him. We don't want him to miss Sunday school. And they did. It was about a month later, we were getting ready to start up another training session to equip people to share their faith. And his wife came to me, Evelyn. She said, Pastor, Bill wants to equip two more people. He wants to help you. I said, Evelyn, he's not well enough. She said, I know that and you know that. But he just insists he's going to do it. She said, so the only thing I'm going to ask you is, would you please not let him drive? And I said, okay, I won't let him drive. Bill equipped two more people to share their faith. At the end of that 8 weeks, the Lord called him home. What a way to go into glory. Walk into glory telling Jesus, hey, we just equipped two more people, but we saw this many that are going to be in your kingdom one day. I'll get to see them again. What a way to go into glory. And we went, Diane and I went by the house to visit with Evelyn and her daughter about the service, and there were so many people. She said, come back into our bedroom. And so we went back there to talk with them, and Evelyn says, well, before we get started, I want you to look over there on that wall, and there was a carving of a fish. Now, I like to go to Colorado and trout fish. If I can go every year, I go every year. But I love to trout fish. We had a carving of a fish on there, and underneath it was an inscription that said, wishing I was fishing. Wishing I was fishing. And I said, well, Evelyn, I like that. Of course, Bill liked to fish, and he knew I did. She said, well, I want you to look underneath that carving in that antique tackle box. He had an old antique tackle box down there. And she said, I want you to look inside it. And I said, okay. Well, you know, I thought, well, there's going to be some antique, maybe some old reels and fishing line and hooks and weights and, you know, maybe some antique lures and things like that, you know. So I walked over and bent down and opened that case, and it wasn't any of those things. What he had inside were all of his witnessing tools, his tracts, marked New Testaments, things like that. He had a notebook where he had kept track, Dr. Blazing, of every boy he had ever taught in Sunday school. He had that boy's name listed. He had it dated when he prayed to receive Christ, when he was baptized, when he joined a church. If he knew today where he was a judge or he was in jail, he had that recorded. He had another section where he had the list of every person he had ever talked to about Jesus but had yet to pray to receive Christ. And that was his prayer list every single day. Wishing I was fishing. Send North America. It's only a slogan unless God writes on our hearts, especially with folks like you in this room this morning, wishing I was fishing. And that becomes our passion. And that we really have a conviction about lost people. And the love of Jesus just overwhelms us. Wishing I was fishing is just it just burned across our hearts. And we have a new sense of urgency because of the lateness of the times. Then Send North America becomes more than just a slogan. It becomes a penetrating action that will change the spiritual landscape of North America. Let me pray for you. Father, I thank you so much for this emphasis this week on North American missions. I thank you for Dr. Lee and for Clarity and those that surround him, and for their work with the students here. Thank you so much for Dr. Patterson, Mrs. Patterson, Dr. Blazing, all of our faculty and staff, and for their willingness to have days like this set aside here at Southwestern to focus on the great needs and the great opportunities across North America to share the gospel and plant churches. And Lord, our prayer is that as the Lord of the harvest, that you will call out the laborers, and many of them are right here in front of me this morning, that you will call out the laborers into your harvest field. In Jesus' name, amen.
Thank you for listening to this audio from Southwestern Baptist Theological Seminary. If you want more information on our academic programs, or if you would like to support our mission, visit www.swbts.edu.